show up. I wouldn't show up. I wouldn't show up.
Look at what we saved you converts from.
Was that one woman speaking Eric Keen from Dune?
Wow. Guys, I have a nasty cough. I apologize. Nick, did you used to speak in tongues?
I didn't. No, I was the lame kid who read the Bible and was like, I can't do this.
I can't do this. I'm out, guys.
I read the Bible. I can't do this.
But, bro, I grew up with that stuff. Like, when that came on, I was like, oh no, why?
We've actually talked about this stuff before on the show, but Nick was asking why we wanted to come on Sunday, and I said, well, we didn't do a show Thursday because I really didn't want to be a distraction during Holy Week, like on Thursday, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, or anything. But I did want to come on to welcome all the new converts, and there's some things we're going to tell the converts that they didn't know before they came in.
All the little secrets.
All the little secrets. There's a lot of things they don't. There's a lot of things they don't tell you in RCIA, and I figured we would come on and, let them
save
in on
the buyer's remorse.
Yeah. Well, Nick, how long have you been Catholic now?
It's actually coming on 6 years. 6 years.
Okay, so at 10 years, there's some things you get perks at 10 years. you get a few perks like. All right, so the thing is, cradle Catholics, like, we could still buy indulgences. It's a reward you get because your parents aren't filthy heretics. So, like, we could still buy, our way into heaven while you guys have to
work. Get a little punch card too. Every 10 indulgences, you get another one free.
Yeah, like you guys have to work your way into heaven. We don't.
Sounds real.
For Catholics.
I don't know. Is that how many converts are in the chat? Is there a lot of new that just came in? Last night. Yeah.
So they're gonna regret coming in after watching this stream.
So I went to the vigil last night.
That's like, you're really a Catholic.
Did any of you guys go to the vigil last night?
No.
Here we go. Here's one.
Just join. All right.
Hey, welcome.
Praise God.
Praise God is right, man. Okay, so I went to the vigil last night. I always go to
Mason. I went to the vigil too, yeah.
Yeah, it's my favorite liturgy to go to. It's like, I mean, it's a very long. Usually it's like 2.5 hours. Last night was like 3.5 because there were so many new converts coming in that it took like 45 minutes to baptize and confirm all the new converts.
Was it TLM?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I went into Manhattan. I went to Holy Innocence. So I invited Ryan Katsu Rivera, who's Gavin McInnes's producer. And we go there, and he has his 2-year-old daughter and his newborn son. So I'm like, let's sit up in the loft, because you're better off up in the loft in case there's a little noise. It wound up working out perfectly. But when we get up there, there's a kid, James, that goes to my parish who was up in the loft also. So it was like all the Long Island guys went into the city to go check this mass out last night. It's unlike any liturgy I've ever experienced. So it starts off pitch black in the church. They got the fire at the back of the church, and everybody lights their candle off the one candle, like the Lumen Christi candle goes up, and it just lights up, and the whole church gets lit up in candles. Mm. And the whole liturgy starts off like that. But the highlight of the liturgy is right as the mass begins and they start singing the, is it the Gloria? Yeah. The Gloria in Excelsis. Yeah. And the bells start ringing and they pull all the veils off the statues. It's like, you get like a rush when that happens. I mean, it's a very long process to get there, but when that happens, like, you see all the little kids' eyes light up and stuff. But it really is a very long liturgy to put it's like boot camp for the new converts. Like,
yeah.
Guys, just so you know, every mass is not that long. It's like
once a year thing.
So once a year thing. So then as I was leaving, a guy named Felix came up to me and my family, and he's like, comes up to me, and like, we were walking out of the thing already. I was like almost a block away. And he comes up to me. He's like, hey, sir, can I talk to you for a second? And I'm like, you're in New York City. You have no idea, And he's like, do you have a channel? I'm like, yeah. He's like, Avoiding Babylon. I'm like, yeah. He goes, I came from Panama. Like, he came up to New York for Holy Week just to experience the Holy Week liturgy.
And I'm glad it was that and he didn't come just to say hi to you.
Right? Let down. But yeah, his name is Felix. So Felix, what's up? But like for anybody that bumps into me, but especially Rob, if you guys see Rob out there,
no,
like, make sure you come over and say hello to him.
Absolutely not.
Rob really likes meeting new people and just having conversations with strangers on the street. It's his favorite thing to do.
Someone at our local parish on Good Friday said, "Oh, I see you're on YouTube now." I'm like, "No, no, no one at my local parish is allowed to watch because then I can't say anything about my local parish."
Well, you want to know? It's funny. My daughter made her confirmation 2 weeks ago, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the parish is packed, but it's a Novus Ordo. It's a diocesan parish, so it has both the Novus Ordo and the traditional Latin Mass there.
The bishop was there, right?
The bishop was there, yeah. Okay. And not one person comes up to me at that one, you know? But if I go to a Latin Mass, I don't care where I am, somebody at the Latin Mass will, you know, at least one person there will recognize me because
I have to travel down to the Minneapolis-St. Paul next weekend. And I'm choosing the mass we're going to based on where I think no one will recognize me. I think if we go to the FSSP, someone will recognize me. So I think we're going to drive a little bit further to go to the SSPX.
It's funny, though, because well, you got to think about most people that are looking out, trying to find that most people that go to the Latin mass are digging into their faith a little bit deeper, just in general. So
yeah. I got a question about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, so well, you'll see all the time people will point out the stats, and it's like, well, if you look at the Novus Ordo versus the Latin Mass, like 99% of the Latin Mass attendees follow the church's teaching on birth control, 99% believe that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. And the reason for that is it's not accidental. It's because people are very purposely going to a traditional Mass because they do take their faith seriously. So you're going to find a group of people that are there very intentionally, where in the Novus Ordo, a lot of people are, I'm not like, this has nothing to do with the Novus Ordo. I'm not knocking it. There's a lot of people who are very cultural Catholics who just go because it's kind of a leftover vestige from their childhood. And then there's a lot of people that go to mass just because of heaven insurance, things like that. Right. So what were you going to say though, Fawaz?
No, I was going to ask, I think you might answer the question there, but in proportion to, do you think that those who go to the TLM are the, like, you could just, for sake of argument, the superstars attend the TLM because they like liturgy better? Or do you think there's something about the liturgy that forms the conscience that makes a better Catholic?
Both. So I think it's maybe a little bit of both, but I also think people that go to the traditional mass are going almost because it's like going to Catholicism on pro mode, like on expert mode, you know? It's like... It's like the Novus Ordo is easy mode and video game language, and like the TLM is kind of just like expert mode. And I think people do seek it out because they kind of want to go a little bit deeper. And I don't know if, because there's so many new people in the traditional mass, right? It's not like these people, like I think they're going because they're seeking it out because of the conversations that we're having on channels like this and Taylor Marshall and things like that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So. How was everybody's Easter?
Really good.
Oh, blessing.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
We definitely wanted to have Enoch on because he put that song out. Would you put it out on Holy Thursday or Good Friday?
Tuesday actually.
Oh, Tuesday, right before Holy Week started. Yeah. And that was that one seemed like a labor of love.
Man, that took a while. It just
seemed like a song that you really like. It seemed like it was born from prayer, not just a song you just wrote.
Absolutely. It was a kind of an accident in a way. So a couple of months ago, Father Ripperger, out of all people, said, you know what would be cool? If you took some chant or some type of Lord of the Rings or some type of Vikings chant, and you rapped over that with no drums to kind of get rid of that jungle, lower faculty type of rap stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll try to find something. And I was talking to Cousin Eddie, actually, Anthony, in his kitchen. And I said, hey, I'm trying to find some type of Drake Triumph type of horn, type of beat. So I could do like an Easter song, he's resurrected, like a really strong Easter song.
I know you're in.
And then we were talking about doing then we're talking about not I don't condone any of these lyrics or encourage anybody to go listen to this, but Nas had a song a few years ago where he tells a story backwards called Rewind. And it's brilliant. So I said, hey, I want to do a story backwards of the Road to Emmaus and tell the story backwards in a rap song. I thought it'd be cool. And Cousin Eddie said, why don't you do that with the Passion? And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So I took Father Ripbreaker's idea of like the chant, because there's no drums in this song. It's just chant. Yeah. And then I took his idea, but I said, instead of telling the story backwards, let me tell a whole new story about this guy who's like just seeing the Passion for the first time. He's gone back to, 2,000 years ago, and he's seeing it for the very first time. And he's like trying to puzzle the pieces together. And when he gets to the end, he finally realizes what this whole thing is about. So the whole thing was kind of an accident, but it's cool how it all came together. I lost my voice the next day with that one. It took me several hours to finish it, because I had to take long breaks in between. But glory to God, it was so much fun to do, and I didn't know what the reaction was going to be when I put it out, but everyone has just been absolutely great. I appreciate everyone listening.
Yeah, guys, if you haven't yet, it's on what's your actual YouTube channel name?
Enoch.
So just go on Enoch's channel and check it out. It's like it's a different kind of song.
I have it pulled up if we want to play it now.
Yeah, we'll play that now, but then we're going to flip into something else. So play Enoch's song. Make sure
Make sure what?
He doesn't get us a copyright strike.
I was going to say, I will laugh if this gets the stream pulled.
That's down. What I'm worried about. That's the only thing I'm worried about.
Well, maybe we'll let Enoch comment after about 30 seconds of it.
You're going to have to do it in 30 second snippets, because they will yank the stream on it.
Okay, yeah. let's do
it that way. What up, Todd?
Yeah. All I hear is chanting and chattering, chains rattle and gather them like cattle while assassins ready for battle.
So, okay, that's the first 30 seconds. Who's doing the vocalizing? Did you just find a track for that?
No, so I got access to a lot of independent producers with their catalogs. And I was trying to find something that just didn't have any drums to it. And he's got a lot of great catalog, and he's doing a lot of these over voices and layering them. So this is the one that I picked, because I thought it was perfect. It's kind of got that, Middle Eastern almost vibe to it, which is perfect for the Passion.
So now you're writing this from the perspective of a Roman soldier.
I'm writing this from the perspective of somebody who's been transported back and has no idea what's going on. It's just somebody that's just they just show up to the trial, but they don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like somebody who just heard about this trial, about this Jesus person, and somebody who has a sense of justice in his conscience.
All right, let's go on.
Pharisees have had it, demand exchange with Barabbas, deranged practice arranged by those in high status, while his fabric is tattered, blood stains on his habit, half the crowd is cowardice, other half chant crucify him savages. It's so happening so fast, but for me it's the slow-mo. A pilot stands, extends his hands and proclaims, Ecce homo. Next thing you know, he's condemned to let the slaughter. I follow far behind in horror, half the crowd is weeping, other half is applauding. Weight of the cross was so heavy, the crown of thorns held down, and soldiers beat him so bad that he stumbled and fell down.
This is, did you see somebody posted Ernest Borgnine was in he was in Jesus of Nazareth back in 1978 whenever they made that movie, and Ernest Borgnine back in 1975 he was offered a part in the film Jesus of Nazareth. He tells a story. Our cast directed by the renowned Franco Zeffirelli, included, tells everybody that's in it. Said, February 1976, a cold, damp wind continually knocked over the floodlights and stung us with desert sand. I was uncomfortable in my thick leather uniform. My neck ached under a ponderous metal helmet, and I even began to pity those ancient Roman soldiers who were called centurions because they had to command that because they commanded 100 men. When it came time for my scene during the crucifixion, the weather was chilly and gray. The camera was to be focused on me at the foot of the cross, and so it was not necessary for Robert Powell, the actor who portrayed Jesus, to be there. Instead, Zeffirelli put a chalk mark on a piece of scenery besides the cameraman. "I want you to look up at that mark," he told me, "as if you were looking at Jesus." "Okay," I said, moving into position and looking up at the mark as instructed. I hesitated. Somehow I wasn't ready. I was uneasy. "Do you think it would be possible for somebody to read from the Bible the words of Jesus as he hung on the cross?" I knew the words well from the days of my childhood in an Italian-American family in Connecticut, and I'd read them in preparation for the film. Even so, I wanted to hear them now. The director said he would do it himself. He found the Bible, opened it to the book of Luke, and signaled for the camera to start rolling. As Zeffirelli began reading Christ's words aloud, I stared up at the chalk mark, thinking what might have gone through the centurion's mind. "That poor man up there," I thought. "I met him when he healed my servant, who was like a son to me." So he's saying this as from the perspective of this centurion, right? Mm-hmm. "That poor man up there," I thought. "I met him when he healed my servant, who was like a son to me. Jesus says he is the Son of God, an unfortunate claim during these perilous times, but I know he is innocent of any crime. Father, I forgive them, for they know not what they do. Or Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," the voice of Zeffirelli's. But the words burned into me, the words of Jesus. "Forgive me, Father, for even being here," was the centurion's prayer that formed in my thought. "I am so ashamed, verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise," Jesus said to the thief hanging next to him. If Jesus can forgive that criminal, then he will forgive me, I thought. I will lay down my sword and retire to my little farm outside of Rome. Then it happened. As I stared upward, instead of the chalk mark, I suddenly saw the face of Jesus Christ, lifelike and clear. It was not the features of Robert Powell I was used to seeing, but the most beautiful, gentle visage I had ever known. Pain-seared, sweat-stained, with blood flowing down from the thorns pressed deep, his face was still filled with compassion. He looked down at me through tragic, sorrowful eyes with an expression of love beyond description. Then his cry rose against the desert wind, not the voice of Zeffirelli reading from the Bible, but the voice of Jesus himself. "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." In awe, I watched Jesus' head slump to one side. I knew he was dead. A terrible grief welled within me. Completely oblivious to the camera, I started sobbing uncontrollably. Like, that's pretty wild, right? Wow. He says later, "I'm not sure if I actually had a vision of Jesus, but something happened in my heart at that moment that I just started to weep at the foot of the cross, staring up at a chalk mark." Which this seems kind of like your song, where you're going with it, you know, it's just somebody beautiful. Stumbling upon it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
"Now, women approached him with a white cloth, wipes his bloody face with some of the skin came right off. I moved closer for a better position. She offered a drink, denying permission. I guess he was the physician who healed the blood condition." When
pause it right there.
Out in the distance, a radio.
I don't know if you guys caught that, but he was the physician who healed the blood condition. I was talking about St. Veronica. Well, Eusebius talking about the women with the hemorrhaging blood condition.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I put that connection. It was Veronica and the women. So I put that in the song.
Take us through any of those little tidbits.
Sure. You guys were the ones that told me that in a text message a few months back, that it was Eusebius who said Veronica was, according to Eusebius, that it was St. Veronica was the one who, with
That's right. You know, I learned that from Steve Cunningham, actually.
Well, it's not a bad person to learn from.
Yeah, Steve Cunningham actually told me that. He sent me like a whole article on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, so that's where
Veronica was the woman that was hemorrhaging, right. And then she sees him on the Via Dolorosa, and she wipes his face.
Mm. Sorry, Rob, go ahead.
"Women approaching the victim, she kneels down in front of him. What a picture. I read his lips, I make all things new. Then the soldiers kicked him. I asked who this is, someone shouted, that's his mother. My heart flooded, I froze. No mother should witness the son battered and beaten, treated like sheep. The balance, the lady of sorrow, she keeps it silent. She wrapped her arms around him and held him for a while. It felt familiar, the type of comfort the only mother can give her own child. They grab their hands to clear his face, pick up your cross, keep moving, cursing and whipping him, spit in his face, no justice."
That's the image of Our Lady and Our Lord.
Right, yeah, because everybody, especially at what, like, because I'm sure everybody watched The Passion, right?
Yeah.
Like, a Good Friday, that's like a liturgy in my home. We watched The Passion. So I was thinking about, like, all the different because every time I watch it, it's like a different scene that gets me. And this time it was Peter's denial. So like I've had it where it's watching Our Lady. Everybody loves that scene where she sees him when he falls on the way, and she sees the vision of him as a child, and she runs to him as a child. Like that's one, especially as a mother, that just strikes your heart. But this time, Peter's denial, it was like so many times where just like my weakness just really just broke my heart, man. Just because every time we commit something like any kind of sin, you're basically denying Christ.
You know why you know why Peter denied Jesus three times?
No, is this going to be a quip? It's here.
Because Jesus healed his mother-in-law.
Wow. That's pretty ruthless. Man.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. Okay. All right,
go ahead.
My frustration, I'm patient, heart's racing, I'm wasting time. Why don't anybody put an end to this fallacious crime? I'd rather die a hero than live as a coward. I make my way through the crowd, squeezing, I'm freezing, heavy breathing. I'm so close, I can smell the bleeding. I'm saving him, I don't care if I die for treason. I'm inches from the scene, again I freeze. Why is my name on the street? Every sin I'm involved, every word needed thought, as in this cross. It took one look at me, then rose to a sea. Then I realized this is all happening because of me.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate going on right now about who's responsible for the crucifixion, right?
Multiple people, I think.
But there's,
by the way, shout out to if you don't mind, shout out to Kennedy Hall, man. He did the review of the song too, and that was so cool of him to do that. And there were a couple of folks, and I knew that anytime you got you know a rapper coming in a trad world, you're gonna get those people who think that, you know, All forms of music that's not chant is intrinsically evil.
Right.
But it's funny because one of them was like, oh, this type of music feels the passion. But I'm like, I specifically picked something with no drums. So I don't, but it's like, don't quiver.
Well, that's interesting that Father Ripperger is the one that gave you that suggestion, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He said, do something with no drums, just chant, just rap over that. And it worked. I thought it was really cool.
You said you were talking to my cousin Eddie about it. My cousin Eddie's little brother Tommy, his wife's father passed in a car accident 2 nights ago on Holy Thursday, I think, or Good Friday maybe. Yeah. So I'm going to his wake tomorrow. But yeah, just keep him in your prayers. That's rough. She's pregnant too. She's got a baby on the way. And she just lost her father.
That's really rough.
Yeah, this is a rough Easter for them. That Ernest Borgnine thing. So yeah, should we discuss the Christ the King thing, or is that has that been had?
Let's do it. I think it's fine. I think it's apt because I mean, like, the whole point of Easter, in a certain sense, is that Christ tramples down death over death, and he's shows himself King of the universe, King of the world, King over life and death.
The thing is, Lila Rose, right? Lila Rose.
Yeah.
Yes.
She put out a post.
Horrible.
And it really just irked me because just in the Rob, can you find that? You think, or is that?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Let's see if you can just find it and not even play what she says. Just read what she wrote in the tweet.
I never listened to her video. I can't personally stand her voice. Yeah, so I didn't
have
listen,
a hard time with her too. But so she in
her pro-life stuff is really good. Other than that, I think she's just taking that lane. Which is great. She doesn't
The pro-life stuff is great. Yeah. It's just what she wrote about Jesus not coming to bring a political kingdom is what I took issue with.
Well, now, sorry to cut you off, Anthony, but how many Novus Ordo homilies have we heard during the Feast of Christ the King? That Christ is only the king of your heart, not the king.
Yeah.
I mean, that comes from a Novus Ordo perspective.
It really does. So you have to be completely ignorant of Christian history to have that point of view. I mean, you have to really think about what Christendom was. If Christ doesn't come to establish a political kingdom, what is a king at that point, right? Yeah. So when Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world, first off, he hasn't ascended yet. At the ascension, Christ sits at the right hand of the Father, and that is where he draws all things into him. Now, at that point, it is absolutely a political kingdom. The gospel Jesus is going around saying, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.
There's a difference between a worldly kingdom and a political kingdom. A political kingdom isn't necessarily of this world.
But even it, but it is of this world anyway. Like, well, it is of this world.
It's not worldly.
It's not of this world in origin, I think, because that's right. The point. Like, the kingdom, according to traditional ecclesiology, is the church. So the kingdom of God right. is the church. So, like, mm-hmm. Christ is the head, comes down. He's the king of the church. He establishes his kingdom through his blood, being the church. And then the church goes forward and conquers the world, conquers civil society for the gospel, right? So that they can bring heaven to earth, if you will. And so, like, sure, it doesn't have its origin point in the sense of, like, yeah, it's something that, like, a bunch of humans got together and let's make a group or a party or a kingdom, but its origin is the Son of God bringing it from heaven to earth. And that's what I think Lila Rose completely messed up, because she, you know, there's technically, I guess, like, a right way you could read her, where it's like, sure, like, in Christ's first coming, he wasn't trying to, like, overcome the Romans. So there's, like, a way you can read it, but then the way she goes forward just butchers Catholic thought.
So, all right, so look, one can say Christ is king and the Lord may say, I never knew you. Christ did not come to establish a political reign here on earth. Yes, he did.
He did.
He chastised the followers who asked it from him, saying, my kingdom is not of this world. No, he says to Pilate,
yeah,
my kingdom is not of this world. He does not chastise his disciples. Look, what she's getting confused with is his disciples at first wanted him to be the king of Israel in the way they saw it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So he was never going to be the king of Israel and conquer the world in the name of Israel in that way. But he absolutely came to establish a political kingdom on this earth. And that is what happened. And that kingdom overthrew the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the little stone that, I mean, when you go into Daniel 2, Daniel mm-hmm. 2 is a prophecy about this statue and Nebuchadnezzar's dream and the head of gold and the chest of silver and the legs of bronze and then the iron and clay mixed. And that image, a little stone will shatter the image and it will cover the whole earth. That is the kingdom that comes, and it's absolutely a political kingdom, and it's of this world. And it's a strange thing for us as Americans, because we have this idea that, like, there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, but there is not supposed to be a separation of church and state.
Her post really is just American liberalism. That's 100%. What it comes down to.
100%.
So she's right that it is not... where she says here, it is not the Christian project to idolize social or political power. Idolize it, no, but you should absolutely be in the middle of social and political power.
Her next sentence, or next part of that sentence, is entirely wrong. Like, where she demanding says that it's not the Christian project
from others because Christ said, yes, yeah, that's very wrong, man. In fact, this is the opposite. We are called to be salt and light, remembering that the faith we possess is a gift given to us by God, one we do not deserve.
And that's just entirely pointless. Like, that has nothing to do with the rest of it.
So my issue with this is that she gets on and she makes this proclamation as if she's speaking from a position of authority, and people read it, and especially people that aren't well-formed in their faith and really don't understand. And this isn't a knock to Lila. It's just a lot of people have this misconception of what we're supposed to be doing. It was always supposed to be like a one-world government of the... So, like, if you really understand the early church saw it as there was one empire, Christendom. There was going to be one empire. Like, it doesn't matter... all that matters is there is one church and one empire, and that empire, and that is to fulfill that Danielic prophecy. So you have these Catholics.
I was just going to say, even going later in history, throughout, you know, the medieval kingdoms and things, like, they still saw Christendom as one empire,
one king, just, right? With subsidiarity, just
with subsidiarity.
Yes. Right. So that's how that ends up getting worked out. But it's still one kingdom, right? Now, in the Middle Ages, you have different kings in Europe, but the church unifies them, and the church is very much involved in the politics of medieval Europe. I mean, you have, even when you go back and you look at what's going on with King Henry VIII, you're seeing the cardinals are very involved in the politics of the kingdom. It was never supposed to be this separation. This separation happens after the Protestant Reformation. Exactly. That is when you start seeing. So this, what she's saying is a very Protestant idea. And it's not good. And it's because we're American and we see things from an American perspective. But what you really have is you're supposed to have Catholics in positions of politics working through their Anthony just said Danielle, like prophecy is going to be one of those nights. So
when if anyone's still playing the drinking game, that does mean.
But what you have is you're supposed to have Catholics getting into look our Supreme Court, right? We have several Catholics on the Supreme Court. They were able to overturn Roe v. Wade because they're using their Catholic intellect to inform the way they view the law. Right. Now, that should be in every position. Like Joe Biden is a Catholic. If Joe Biden was actually living according to the Catholic faith and doing things as a Catholic, we'd have a very different country right now. We wouldn't have Easter being combined with this trans day of visibility.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. One thing I'd point out is I agree with you 100%. And she is definitely especially influenced by the American world because she's kind of a larger name, like a second tiered name in the conservative ink world for sure. But I think that she gets a lot of this also from, if you will, basically everything that's transpired post Vatican II and council. Because when you look at the pre-conciliar popes, they're just bashing night and day liberalism. They're just like you look at Quanta Cura, the Syllabus of Errors, right? By Pius IX, especially Gregory the 16th on the current errors, etc. They're just pounding away and destroying liberalism, especially the idea of separation of church and state, freedom of speech, etc. But then, you know, whether you like it or loathe it, you can't deny the fact that, you know, when you look at something like Dignitatis Humanae, when it comes to religious freedom from the council, that creates confusion. I won't get so much into that, but I bet you guys, all three of you guys, can relate with this. I even have at diocesan parishes, at least once a year, we'll see some type of promo and like a flyer or a bulletin or something like that, where it'll be like National Day to like pray for freedom of religion, let's stand up for religious freedoms, etc. Like something.
The bishops got behind it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But then you're sitting there as a trad, like, this isn't Catholic though. Like, I get what they're saying. Like, yes, let's not be persecuted. Let's allow the Catholic faith to be in America. Okay. I get that. But from a Catholic position, you don't have the right to worship false gods. You only have the right to do that which is morally right, which is to follow the faith.
So, Rob, I actually sent in the WhatsApp. There's a clip of Cardinal Wuerl.
Yeah, I saw that.
Pull that up. Cardinal Gregory. I'm sorry, Wuerl used to be there. It's now it's Gregory.
I haven't Cardinal seen Wilson
Gregory. Who's that person next to him?
Face the Nation clip. Yeah, play the Face the Nation clip. Let's. It's only a minute long. He's on there with some broad.
Some broad. Bishop Broad.
In the case of the president, do you get a sense that his regular attendance and adherence...
Wait, is that a guy?
...resonate?
Wait, Gregory?
I think it is a guy. No, one,
is that a guy?
I have no idea.
Here's another day of visibility. Who knows?
Regular attendance and adherence to the faith resonates.
Does it just me? Does it look like he purposefully has his pectoral cross hidden?
That's interesting.
That's a good point.
Maybe not trying to show off his authority.
I mean, it almost looks like it's tucked like under his left arm.
It's like under his armpit.
Like this is against the. All right, go back to the beginning so people can hear the question. Go back to the beginning so people can hear the question because the question's important.
In the case of the president, do you get a sense that his regular attendance and adherence to the faith resonates with American Catholics?
I would say that he's very sincere about his faith. But like a number of Catholics, he picks and chooses dimensions of the faith to highlight while ignoring or even contradicting other parts. There is a phrase that we have used in the past, a cafeteria Catholic. You choose that which is attractive and dismiss that which is challenging.
Or, as Thomas Aquinas would say,
that's a woman.
You allow your conscience to guide you.
Right? Is there something on the menu he's not ordering?
I love traditional Thomas is having an aneurysm, so to speak.
I would say there are things, especially in terms of the life issues, there are things that he chooses to ignore or he uses the current situation as a political pawn rather than saying, look, my church believes this.
In the case of the president.
So
that's actually
that. Yeah, you're right. I
didn't.
I'm broad.
I didn't expect Gregory to like actually admit that.
Yeah, he did admit more than I thought he would. But even still, what his solution was, well, what he should just do is say, well, my church teaches this, but this is what I believe. He's going the JFK line, right? Like personally opposed or, right. You know, personally, I'm against this thing, but I won't follow it out for the law. But dude, that's his bishop. And you're talking about a president who came out and on Easter Sunday said, this is trans day of visibility thing. Like that was just a direct shot in the face of Christians. It's like if he's
acknowledging that one of the people he's ordinary of is contradicting the faith, why does he not excommunicate him?
Well, that's the thing. Exactly. He says in the statement that there's many Catholics in the U.S. who pick and choose what they believe. But that's a horrible answer, because according to the solemn teaching of the church, both in canon law as well as in magisterial pronouncements, if you willfully deny one point of the authoritative magisterium in faith and morals, you are not a Catholic. And by even the current code of canon law, 1983, John Paul II, all heretics and schismatics and apostates are automatically excommunicated, right? This is people who are willful, of course, right? People willful manifest heresy, etc. So he should have come out and very clearly said, yeah, look, Biden's not a Catholic, right? Most people in America who claim to be Catholic aren't Catholics, so maybe he resonates with them. And that could have been a good teaching moment. You could have been like, there's this thing called cafeteria Catholicism, which is just fake Catholicism. It doesn't exist. But that lady, Thomas, I'm not even going to get started with
that. No, please. let's
get into it. Nick, may I say something?
Go for it, bro.
Think about this. He's probably going both ways too, because he'll say most Catholics, because he'll go with the conservative and say, see, they don't believe what Pope Francis said about the death penalty, so they can pick and choose as well. He's throwing it on both sides so he can cover his tracks.
Who's going both ways?
This
is a good point. You got to understand that Cardinal Gregory is himself a cafeteria Catholic.
All right.
100%.
Well, and a lot of our bishops are, right? Like there was a group of bishops that came out and were urging Wilton Gregory to excommunicate Joe Biden. I mean, you had Strickland and a whole bunch of them all got together, and even Mueller, Cardinal Mueller, who was just on with Tucker. I wish Tucker got Bishop Schneider instead. It's hard to understand Mueller.
His accent.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky.
Schneider's not much better.
Yeah. Plus, Mueller, though, the thing is with Mueller, like, you know, it's really sad because, like, there's a lot of good he says, but then you read a lot of his books and you see, like, you know, he kind of questions the reality of miracles in the New Testament, wondering not whether or not they were just symbols and things like that. And Mueller? Like, oh, this is an interesting...
He's a Benedict.
Yeah, Mueller.
He's a Benedict Catholic.
Yeah, same as Benedict. And so you're just sitting there like, this is eerily similar to literally... Pascendi Dominici Gregis by Pius X, explicitly talking about like modernism, one of its manifestations is the denial of miracles in the New Testament. Now, I'm not calling Cardinal Mueller a modernist. I'm just saying clearly if he's teaching this, maybe he's been influenced by it in some way.
Influenced by it, yeah. The problem is like everybody has at this point. It's so crazy. Like all of our bishops have. To be fair, Mueller probably dropped Anthony's accent. So all right. So they keep bringing this point up, right? So I read that this visibility day has been going on since 18 or 19. This year happened to fall on Easter, but for Biden to ban anything Christian wrong. So it's like I get that. Yeah, they chose March 31st years ago, but. Look, the idea that you have a Catholic president, and then Governor Hochul tells every building in New York to recognize this. You see the image of 1956 Easter Sunday, where every building has a crucifix on it to celebrate Easter in our country 50 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever, 75 years ago. And now they're lighting it up with the flag of the rainbow thing. And you just see how far our nation has just tumbled to go, not even just, like, they'd have been better off just not acknowledging it today. Just been like, all right, let's just not say anything, you know? Like, you know, you're spitting in the face of the majority of people, because still a majority of this country still does identify as Christian and they don't want to see this nonsense. But part of the reason they're doing it is to get a reaction from us. And they're going to use that reaction against us to come down and hammer down on us in the future.
It's also election season.
It's election. I think it's part of that, Anthony. I also think part of it is that they just know that they can get away with it. And this is something that I've really started to, like, I guess, recognize the evil of, is that so many, all the mainline Protestant denominations, they're called like the classic, the Sister Sevens, right? So like the Episcopalians, Methodists, etc. All of them accept sodomy. They all accept all this. They all promote this stuff. So it's pretty much just like traditional conservative Catholics and the evangelical wing of Protestantism in the U.S. at the moment, who's like pushing up against this stuff. But they know that they can get away with this, which I think ties back into what we're talking about even with Lila Rose, is that, as I mentioned in the video that I made on this subject, this attitude of Christ did not come to set up a political kingdom, this attitude amongst Christians is exactly why this stuff is going on. Yeah. Like, if we actually had a majority Catholic men's, if you will, population that, you know, actually had a backbone and was going to say no to this stuff, it wouldn't happen, right? But we don't. That's probably, most of the churches are ran by women. Most of them are more in, like, focused in on some type of communal soft activity. Go to like your average parish catechesis lecture, it's usually run by women. All of the Sunday schools are run by women. You know, shoot, most of the evangelical pastors now, a good chunk of them are women. Yeah. And so my whole point is that everything's gotten so feminized. And so Christian nationalism, man, it's the only way to go forward in the long
term. Yeah, so that conversation's been popping up a lot lately, right? Christian nationalism, and they're trying to say it's like a dirty word and stuff, but it really is. I mean, if you look towards even a country like Hungary, which it's not even a Christian nationalist country, but at least you have their leaders trying to allow Christianity to form their judgments and opinions and stuff. Like, we're in such bad shape now that the idea that Christian nationalism would be this dirty word, like, because people think it's like theocracy we're looking for, to be like the Christian Taliban or something. No, it's that we want our, we want something more akin to what was going on in medieval Europe, where, well, you just
we just have to recognize that that has nothing to do with nationalism, and the problem of Christian nationalism is the nationalism part. The church has historically been opposed to nationalism.
Yeah, it would be more like orthodoxy.
What?
Like, orthodoxy is a nationalist thing, right? So like the different Orthodox churches are very intertwined with their governments, and so, you know, the Russian Orthodox and the Greek Orthodox, like they're very, it's very nationalistic, where the church is supposed to be universal and it's not supposed to be very nationalistic within a thing. But regardless,
it's a pretty dire situation.
The idea would be more just that the Christian conscience should, it should shape everything
really
we do.
Integralism is really what we're looking for.
It's just that Christ's teaching and his laws would be instilled and respected in public social policy. That's just what it is. And so it's just like, I mean,
a recognition of Christ the King.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, yeah, everyone agrees that you shouldn't go out and murder an adult. I use that key phrase adult, right? Because we seem to debate if you're not born. Right. So we all agree on that. But see, this is the thing. If you don't believe in God, if you don't believe that there is an objective truth, then why would you say that? You can say, well, tranquility and human flourishing, etc., etc., but there's not an objective real root that you can point back to. The same thing is with all of these, though. The same God who said thou shalt not murder also said thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind, right? Don't kill your children, right? He talks about husbands honoring their wives, wives submitting to their husbands, etc. All of this stuff works together.
All this
that's a good thing. You guys should actually have this guy on your show, and you guys should specifically
Josiah's look up or Sean.
Well, not you could have both. I don't care. I just want to see what Sean looks like after him having that thumbnail for forever. But I'm actually thinking you guys should have specifically Father Thomas Crean on your guys' show. He is a British Thomist, Dominican Thomist. And he's written, a book called The Handbook on Integralism. He's one of the old school Thomists. I mean, he's young. He's young, too. I think he's in his, like, 30s or 40s. Check him out. But, yeah, he does a lot of stuff with, what's his name? or with Census Fidelium. What's his name?
Steve Cunningham.
Yeah. I remembered Steve, but I was just like, what is the channel's name? Because not everyone here might know Steve. So
if I may talk about more of the political aspect of this thing. So if you go back to the 1990s, Donald Trump today is very similar to Bill Clinton in the 1990s Democrat.
Yeah, he's like a 90s Democrat.
He's a 90s Democrat, and this is how far the left has moved. What was it? Joe Biden just met with Clinton and Obama. When Obama came in, 2012 was one of the only election at that time where it was primarily relied on the base, where mm-hmm. The independent person didn't really matter as much. If you could push the base to come in, Obama was such a charismatic figure that he could really rally the base. Trump, if you look at all of his positions and everything he wants to do in 24, he's in the middle of all of America, because America is in the middle when it comes to the that's why he's all about the was it the 12 or 16 week abortion ban, because the majority in this country are for that. So what Biden is really thinking of doing, and you saw what happened in Michigan, because he's losing those Dearborn. That's why he's trying to call it ceasefire on Israel and try to get rid of Bibi. This whole thing is to pander to the base in order to draw them and try to pull the 2012 election. And that's what he's doing. He's taking Obama's advice instead of Clinton's advice, rather than pulling to the middle. I think middle, left or right, I think we're all screwed. But politically speaking, instead of pulling to the middle like Trump is, he's trying to go far off left, get that base so that, you know, they can have that election in November. And that's what he's doing. This whole transgender thing, this whole Michigan Dearborn thing with the Muslims who are upset with him because of Palestine.
But do you think the typical base Democrat cares about those things that much?
No, because the new base of the Democrat Party is the Rashida Tlaib, Sanders.
No, yeah.
That's the new base. That's what drove Obama into victory in 2012.
Yeah, I think that's the majority of like the core. There's a fair amount that aren't, that are, I think that's why they're headed over to Kennedy. And that's why Kennedy's picking up on a lot of steam. Right. I wouldn't vote for him, of course, because he's a leftist, really. But I think you're right. But here's the big kicker, though. Whereas Obama could draw in the whole crowd, you know, he was young, he was hip, and he was black. Now you got an old white guy who can't string two sentences together, so it's not going to work.
It won't work.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I do think that they're going to try to focus so much attention on Trump's cases. And you see, there's a lot of polls that have been done where they'll go in and they'll say, okay, how does Trump and how does Biden make you feel? And you see overwhelmingly, a lot of people say the message we're getting from Biden is orange man bad, my bad Trump, right? That's what we're getting. Whereas Trump is talking about immigration, he's talking about the economy. And so I know Anthony disagrees with me, but that's why I'm still kind of hopeful for this.
No, election. My thing is this. It's not that. It's that I am pretty convinced that 2020 was taken.
No, I am too, but I'm just.
So I don't see how so many people who believe what I believe have hope that they won't do that again. Like, I don't.
There's different factors in 24 that don't exist in 20, from 2020 to 2024. It was the most more people voted in 2020 than any election in like since the Kennedy election. But you know,
didn't have to leave their house.
Exactly. So that they had the numbers there. Number two, you had the whole mail-in stuff with COVID. Number three, you had the legislation didn't even change the Wisconsin state law, but the judges did, which was not part of the Constitution. That's not going to happen anymore. Now you got Arizona and Pennsylvania talking about verification of voting. What happened in 2020 is not going to happen in 2024. And the fact that he's losing Latinos, I think that Trump can pull it off if he gets the amount of blacks, Hispanics, and independents that he's been getting, that he's polling. The rig, it's going to be too big to rig.
Okay, so now let's say hypothetically he does. Do you think that our country will actually be better off, or do you think it will be like, I just remember what they did. When he got in last time. I remember what 2020 was.
Wait, what'd you say? I think The bigger question is, do they let the transfer of power happen peacefully?
Exactly, Rob.
I don't know if they'll have to. I think they'll.
Well, you bring up a good point, Rob, because the thing is this. It's like, okay, so they failed thus far when it comes to putting him in jail, right? So that's kind of out of the works. He realistically is going to, he being Biden, is going to have to debate Trump. It's going to look horrible if he doesn't debate Trump. Three, they can't just switcheroo at the convention. There's a lot of Democrats who do actually like Biden for Biden, and there's a lot of independents who would just be like, wow, you guys literally do just coronate your candidates. I'm out of here. I'm going to go vote for Kennedy or something. So that means that they know that they can't win in a straight-up fight. So they're going to post, I think, do a lot of court battles. They're basically going to, if you will, do what we've kind of done on the flip side, where they're going to be calling everything in question, and they're going to be dragging everything out in the courts for quite a while post-election.
Okay, I'm talking about life on the ground. Like,
yes,
do you remember
my gas bill will be cheaper. I know it will be cheaper.
I'm talking violence in the streets. I'm talking 2020 riots. Like
I moved 4 hours away to not have to worry about that.
I'm just saying that you got to think about how far they went during his first term. One thing after another. It was just like nonstop. Like that 16 victory was exhilarating for us. It was like, holy cow, I can't believe we won. And nothing got done. Nothing. Only things he got done were through executive order, and Joe Biden was able to overturn those things on day one of his presidency. Nothing he did lasted. What is even going to happen if he gets in, other than chaos?
That's the thing. Like, I mean, because Trump is not a politician, especially in his first term, like, it's going to be different judging him this time around, objectively speaking, than last time. Because every single president prior has been the same old politician, essentially, where you're like, okay, I kind of know what the second term is going to be like. This second term will be interesting. You have way more conservative, like, actually, if you will, MAGA Republicans in the House and Senate. You have way more support there. You also have, on top of that, a lot of state legislatures who look at Texas, look at my state, right? They're already, like, my state is leading the way in fighting immigration problems at the moment. So you have all of that. And then you also have his Schedule F policy, right? You guys familiar with the Schedule F policy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
It's the last thing he signed.
Just get everybody out. Just completely fire everybody.
Exactly. And it's like, okay, 80%. If he goes in there, and if Ramaswamy is even remotely in his cabinet, which I think he's going to be at least in the cabinet somewhere, maybe not VP, but somewhere, you know that they're going to go in there and start cleaning house. If it becomes king, it would actually fulfill the meme, because I think, you know, everybody deep down would love to see, like, Barron Trump become the Catholic King of America, be based. Awesome. That would be hilarious. The line of Trump as emperors of America.
Be more based, Lincoln.
I just, I'm worried about.
Welcome to Avoiding Babylon, Sam.
All right. So.
That's the truth.
That's funny, because Sam's been here since the beginning, so he
knows. Off the rails? Is that what happens?
We're all over the place. Like, I want to kind of go back to music, because my cousin Matt sent me something about Gregorian chant, like these AI Gregorian chant things that they've been putting out, and they're not real Latin. Like, I sent one to the thing, Rob. It's Gregorian chants in honor of Jesus Christ, sacred choir for the Son, but it's an AI chant that is not real Latin, is what my cousin told me. I haven't watched it.
Like, what is it? Just like pig Latin, essentially?
Yeah, like somebody's got to talk about this. He said, please call out these fake AI generated Gregorian chants that are nothing but background noise, leading people to believe they listen to prayer, but it's all garbage. Random Latin words put together, nothing prayerful about it, just another way to deceive people. It drives me crazy. So I don't know what this is. I haven't listened.
Let's go.
Love how we haven't verified this. Okay, let's go.
Like, that definitely didn't say that.
I don't think there's any words here.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's actually chanting anything.
I don't know. That was a submission from my cousin. I don't know.
I want to meet your family if they.
I'm going to wrap like over that. This next time, guys. Thank you for that. I'm going to
Yeah, the AI stuff's getting strange.
You know, speaking of AI, see, here's a question I want to ask all three of you. I feel like this is interesting. It kind of leads into AI, but do you guys think that, like, by the time that, you know, I'm about to die, whether that's, you know, in 5 years in World War III or when I'm 80, we're going to be, you know, eating bugs and living in pods?
Yeah, where do we see the future going? I don't know, man. I'm pretty worried about a lot of it because I think I see even how much I am on my phone, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of people say like, "Oh, I'm never putting the chip in my head. I'm never putting my chip in the chip in my head." But like, the chip is in your hand at all times, and you're freaking in it at all times anyway. I just am worried of how much control our phones have over us and how easily we're all swayed by things and not living in the real world. Part of me almost hopes that there is some kind of cyber pandemic and the whole freaking grid goes down and we just go back, revert.
It's like I ask this question oftentimes when I'm talking to dudes, but it's like, if you knew that there was like a warehouse, right? And you knew in the warehouse somehow, right, all of the connections, all the hoverboards, if you will, of all of the impure websites were inside of this shed, right, on these hoverboards. And you could go in there with the baseball bat and destroy it all, and it would just be gone forever, right? Would you do it? I think I know your guys' answer, but would you do it?
Wait, what was the question?
Just the bad websites?
Let's just say all impure websites.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes sense, right? But then I take it to a step further and I'm like, okay, if you actually could, though, like go in, let's just say, like push a button or smash up a monitor, if you will, that had just the internet, if you will, on it.
Yeah.
You'd wipe out the internet. Would you do it?
It's a tricky question because look, we have a lot of modern comforts, but if you knock out the internet, you're killing.
Welcome back to the 80s.
No, dude, not welcome back to the Stone Age. Everything is dependent upon the internet. Everything, every delivery system, everything is dependent on the internet completely. So if you knock that out, that's almost like dropping an atomic bomb.
But here's the thing.
Morally, it's entirely different.
Yeah, see, that's my question. So it's like, in my question, it's the whole internet, the good, the bad, the ugly. It all goes away, or yet it all stays. You know, what would you do?
I mean, if I'm going to go back, I want to go back to before the printing press. I think the printing press was the end of everything.
Before automobiles, before women could drive.
Yeah, no, but seriously, think about what I'm saying here. I'd get
rid of the internet. 110%. Yeah, because now here would be the sucky thing. I would be like, if it was just down tomorrow, I'd be like, dang, I can't like talk with Anthony and Rob. I gotta like go take a pilgrimage to New York and find Anthony.
No, guys, there is no avoiding Babylon pilgrimage. No.
There's not an official one yet.
He said, like, how do you even? You'd never see each other again.
Yeah, like, because that would just destroy it all. So that would be like the biggest sucky part. Because as we all agree, I think the best part of the internet is stuff like this. This is amazing. Yeah. Yeah. But then it's like, okay, does this outweigh all of the garbage? Not just the impure stuff, but then just like, let's be honest. So much of the blackpilling is because people are on their phones exposing themselves to crazy stuff, as opposed to actually just like going out and hanging out in their community and just having a good time and chilling and
living. I agree with Nick for two reasons. Number one, I think human beings have an incredible ability to adapt. Like, we did adapt to the internet, we can adapt away from it. We'd all just go back to the 80s, like he said. I think the second reason is because I know for a fact that what it's done, TikTok brain, porn brain, all that stuff, it's almost impossible to get people to even commit, if not to stay focused on mental prayer, if the internet exists. It's really taking people away from that.
I'm victim number one right there.
Right, and everybody, like, TikTok brand. I will say this too as well, and I fell victim of this when I was posting on Instagram. This Lent has been so crucial for me. I'm actually thinking about, and I know you guys are talking about this, I'm doing a novena, a 54-day rosary novena, of whether I want to just give it all up and just cancel everything. Like, you know, this would be my last song, and it's like, this is great. But the reason is because I found myself before this, that when I would read like a church father or a desert father, hey Todd, what's up, brother? I would read a church father or a desert father. It wouldn't be so much for me to apply this in my life. It'd be like, oh, I got this jewel. Let me post it on Twitter.
Dude, it's really dangerous, man.
That's a dangerous part, because then your spirituality becomes based on what you post and what you're –
So much of what we do is virtue signal, man. Every one of us is just so much of a virtue signal. It's like, It's like you start reading a book. It's like, oh, let me post a quote that I got from the book to show everybody how
rather cool than I am applying it to your personal life and become.
Did you just subtweet me, Anthony?
it's just last week.
That's what I was doing.
Like, no, but Rob, I do it too. I'm not at all. This is what we do, right? So, it's not just TikTok brain, it's Twitter brain. Yeah. Like you almost, I'm telling you, man, like I have a hard time sitting down in my bed at night and reading a real book. Like I could read the book on my iPad and like I'll read it for a little bit and then I get distracted. I have severe Twitter brain, and I actually confessed this, and I was talking to my priest about this. Just like I think about all of the uncharitable things I say on Twitter, just trying to be a wise ass and being funny. And I wound up having to block a bunch of people because I found every single thing was just this combative interaction. I hate being combative on Twitter. I like being like a little bit of a wise ass, but I just found so many of my interactions were uncharitable. And I found that I'm just constantly scrolling. I really need to do a detox. Somebody asked the question, how do we, I saw you start it, Rob.
Yeah.
How do we reconcile our hatred for the internet and the fact that you have an internet show?
I don't inherently hate the internet. I hate what it's become. And granted, I think it was probably always going to become that just due to fallen human nature. So I don't hate the internet, but I guess I would say I acknowledge what it is and I acknowledge the bad it does, but I also acknowledge that the good it can do and try to.
And we're trying to bring a little bit of good to it, right? So like bringing content out there is, look, everybody's starving for content. So we're trying to bring something positive to that content space because there's so much trash out there. So, I mean, I think that's how I would.
But if even if this were to become like an actual daily job, like main source of income, I would still say losing the internet would probably be worth losing this show too.
Yeah.
I agree. I think maybe the best way of saying it is like you don't hate the internet in and of itself, but you can hate the negative effects. And the negative effects are multiple, from Twitter brain, impurity, I just find, like, especially, you know, you see people talking about this about TikTok quite a bit, the effect that it has on just critical thinking. Like, critical thinking skills have gone down. Like yesterday when I went through President Biden's basically address, making today trans day, etc., I basically walked away from this. I told my mom and dad, I said, the big feeling I got reading this was written for a group of people who do not even know what words mean anymore.
Yeah.
Right. It's the most poorly written gobbledygook you ever read. Right. If you want to see like really sarcastic Nick for 30 minutes, just go and watch that video. It's actually kind of funny. But that's the point. Like, we've become a society where we don't even know what words mean anymore. We can't even do basic critical thinking.
But part of the problem here is this whole, the day of visibility thing. The internet is the cause of it. Okay, so these kids, dude, you're talking about people in like rural Mississippi, and they're dealing with this stuff in their schools because kids are finding this stuff on TikTok, exactly. And then they're being influenced. Yeah. But there's not even a place you could go to get away from it and seclude yourself from it because of the internet. It's such a strange time we're in where it doesn't matter where you live because of the internet, all the information that's connected and the things that people are catching in their algorithms. Like we've talked about it before, where people think the like Terminator 2 scenario comes down and you think that one day the machines are going to take over. That's not what's going to happen. What it is the algorithms are going to warp the human mind so much that you wind up getting attacks like the Texas Uvalde thing, where that girl is watching videos all the time. She gets convinced that Christians are evil because they're against her ideology, and she goes and takes it out on Christians.
Nashville.
Uvalde. Okay, yeah.
Hold on. Did you see this, Anthony?
I actually have the clip. You want it?
Oh, yeah. Send it to me.
I'll send you the clip.
hold on. Before we continue, Hope just sent me something she found on Twitter that was funny. So, Anthony, you know that photo you posted of your new Easter present?
Yes.
Hold on. This was the tweet that showed up on her feed right after that.
pets, life's apology for crummy day, for every crummy day ever. If my pet makes you uncomfortable, I'd be happy to lock you in the other room. Anon, be the person your dog thinks you are. Okay, so to touch on this cat thing real quick, my wife thinks she's cute and she brings a cat home. Okay, this cat, I'm allergic to my other cat as it is, but it's allergic to it where if I pet it and then touch my eyes will get a little red. This cat, I am so allergic to that I broke out in hives when I touched it.
That's awesome. Like,
dude, it looks like I have poison ivy all over my arms from touching this cat for 2 seconds. I'm like, I know you think the cat's cute. It's not happening. Like, I can't be allergic to my house. Like, it's just not happening. I'm not coming home every day and being allergic to my house. Rob, I did send it to you.
Okay, but so, just to talk about the go back to the conversation we were having, there was one good question followed by a very relevant comment. So this question has, like, I mean, a lot of people do get their Catholic community from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if that were to drop, I mean, a lot of people would feel alone. And then that was followed by this from a new convert. What advice would you give to a new convert to the church suffering from loneliness? No friends, not just Catholic friends, but none altogether.
I have two great tips for you. So number one, go find yourself a copy of St. Francis de Sales' Introduction to the Devout Life. He has a whole really short chapter. It's like 2-3 pages in it, where it literally just talks about how to deal with loneliness as a Catholic. You can find it for free online. You can buy a book pretty much anywhere, right? Go check that book out. And also, it's just a great book for your spiritual life as you're starting into the church. But then two, I would say, get involved in your local parish, right? Try to find a really good parish and get involved, right? So look for things like, I don't know how old you are, but assuming if you're young, as an example, like a young adult group or something like that, like look for something where you'll be able to serve. Maybe if you're a male, right, maybe get into altar serving or something like that. And you'll find a brotherhood in that type of environment. Start off with those things, but then ultimately ask our Lord and our Lady to lead and guide you to those people, and recognize that even in your loneliness, right, loneliness, while it hurts, it's a good thing. In the sense that God can use it to purify us, right? God uses all of our sufferings to purify us, and it allows us to really be united to Christ and to experience, you know, his loneliness that he experienced on this earth. So take heart. I know exactly what you're talking about, because I suffer from a fair amount of loneliness myself.
Yeah, something, Enoch?
Well, I just don't, it's just this, and I feel you, brother. And I think what Nick said was absolutely important. The parish that I go to, we have a men's group, but we've got a bunch of we've got a bunch of men that we hang out with, outside of the internet. When we're together, there's no internet, right? I don't understand why it's so difficult for parishes across the whole world to not have men. Need that men mm-hmm. need to go off away from their families and from their kids, and to have a couple of hours once a week or once a month with just cigars and just men and just hang out. Because when you get back home, now you're a better father and husband because of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So men need that. And my thing is, I don't understand why that's not normal in every parish. Like, is it something that's hard? What about it is so hard to start and to get men together?
It takes somebody with a personality like yours or mine to go to the priest and say, hey, we got to start doing something. Like, I'm telling you, what was interesting about last night was I called Ryan and I asked Ryan to come to the liturgy with me. And when we get there, there's a kid in front of me, the kid James, who I see at Mass every week. He does the same thing I do. He bounces between two parishes. So I bounce between one of my parishes. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at this. Triple J. Long time no see, brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I bounce between two parishes. I bounce between one that does the Latin Mass on first and third Sunday, and then I go to another parish that has it every week where my cousin Eddie used to go. This kid does the same thing. He bounces between those two parishes. I see him all the time. I never said a word to him. I walk up into the loft at Holy Innocence yesterday, and he looks and he turns back and he sees me. He goes, "We're not at St. Matthew's today." like we had never had a conversation before. So after Mass, I was like, "Dude, what's your name, man?" Like, you know, so now when we see each other, we'll actually have something to talk about. And now he knows me. I told Ryan, we were going to go out to dinner yesterday. And I'm like, it was just so late by the time we got out. I'm like, listen,
when we go to Mass on Sunday, after Mass, we'll go to lunch together. I'll invite the kid James now. Anybody else there, Don's there. I'll tell Don come, and I'll get a bunch of us to just go out to lunch together. But it takes somebody with a personality like that that is like, dude, just come on, come on, let's go. Like
Todd is the one who started it for us at our parish.
That's it. I said to Ryan when I first met him, I'm like, dude, you're coming to Easter liturgy with me. Like, you're coming to the vigil with me. We're going to go out to eat together. He goes, yo, this is the most Italian thing I've ever heard in my life. He's like, we met 5 minutes ago, and you're like telling me I
got to go.
He calls me Tony Babylone now.
That's awesome.
And then, so if you're in an area without a good parish, which there are areas like that, I would say, and this is more for guys, I guess, go to areas where men traditionally have hung out, like go to a cigar lounge. They might not all be Catholic, but for the most part, they're going to be more conservative-ish, more traditional in a sense. Go to a gym.
Yes, but dude, we've said we were going to talk to the new converts tonight, right? So the new converts, a lot of them left everything to come into the church, right? They left their whole lives, their problem. Some of them are outcast by their family and stuff because they decided to come to Babylon, right? In their minds, that's these people, they went to Babylon. How could they
avoid it?
It's got to be a very strange thing where, you know, what I'll say is this. Easter just passed. We have a lot of new converts coming to the church. If you guys see new faces at your parish, go out of your way to talk to those people, especially the younger people that are coming in. If you see somebody that's lonely out there, like, go out of your way to make those people feel welcome. Because it's a weird thing Catholics do. Catholics sit in the aisle seat and they don't want anybody to squeeze in past them. It's like this weird thing that we do.
Anthony, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
We just this conversation right now, there's a void, there's a vacuum out there that I think somebody, it may be, I don't know, Nick, somebody that needs, somebody young that needs to fill. Imagine there's a talk about websites and the internet being good, an app or a website where you are connecting people in different areas and different parishes now. Because I remember Meg Wells, she's big on Instagram. She just put a post out like a few months ago. All she said was, say where you're from and you know what your name is and where you're from. And then people were connecting with one another. They didn't even know they existed in that area.
Yeah.
So there's a void. Somebody could start something here where they can connect to people all across the world in a Catholic sphere. I think Tim Gordon would be perfect to do it. But
that phrase he came up with, though, parish orphans, is so good, right? Because brilliant. So many of us just feel like parish orphans. Like if you don't have a good parish, and it's just kind of a disaster, because it really is a liturgical wasteland out there. I feel bad for a lot of people.
I'm worried this person might be from our local parish, because our local parish is St. Anthony of Padua.
All right, so the converts. Okay, here's the thing to the converts. I know we have like a lot of apologetics out there that are like trying to tell you, like, you know, we don't actually worship statues, like, you know, we're just venerated. I'm like, you guys are pagan now. I'm just telling you, you guys have come in. We do worship statues.
All the stuff the prot said, it's true.
It's 100%. All true. Like, Constantine actually did steal the church in the 300s, and he introduced pagan rituals, and you guys 100%. Have been duped. Okay, yeah, we'll do the Nick Moed this video.
Anything to stop
Anthony. No, we don't just worship statues. We worship statues that worship statues, guys. Like, we really
Yeah, you need to get a statue worst. Of someone kneeling at a statue. That's when it. You know you're Catholic.
This is the other thing. Like the Knights of Columbus, it's sad because they're such older guys. Like you can't even do the Knights of Columbus.
I can't do
it. I mean, I've not to interrupt the Nick Fuentes bit that you guys are chomping at the bit for, but to answer Enoch, I actually have thought about starting something like that. It's very far back in the work, but some type of like Catholic social action group where it can actually be involved in the community, but some type of project where we like focus in on like men in community, but building virtue together would be great.
That's brilliant. That's much needed.
Yeah. Enoch, you are very fortunate in your parish, man. Like it's you guys have such an awesome group down there, man. It's like,
well, we're all parish orphans. We all came from different areas.
Yeah. You guys all travel together.
We don't have family outside of our parish. Most of us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like you and my cousin became family because you guys both moved away from home and found family down at that parish.
Where do you live, Enoch?
Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky. Okay.
Yeah. Central Kentucky. I just saw Eric Thomas the other day.
Yeah. He went to your parish for baptism, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. So somebody super chatted Nick Fuentes the other day about us.
Oh boy.
That's awesome.
Jacob Strange sent $5. Is there any chance you take up avoiding Babylon or Tim Gordon on offers to go on their podcast?
Oh my gosh.
Would love to steer some more Catholics in the right direction.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They keep bugging me about it. And I'm a
hold on, Nick. If you're watching this, I want you to know it's not they. It's not me.
Yo, I got all right. So I know two people that know him. I know two people that know him. And I asked the first one, I'm like, yo, just shoot him and ask him. And I don't know if he even got that text. So then somebody else that knows him is like, yo, I can get a message to him. Write me a message. So this is the message I sent. So you guys want to hear the message I sent to him?
Not really. Should
I ask Rob?
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you guys this message I sent. Okay, so this is what I said. Nick, I know it's a long shot, but here it goes. Avoiding Babylon is a small but fast-growing Catholic channel that has some stellar guests, Mel Gibson, Taylor Marshall, Matt Frad, Tom Holland, Trent Horner, to name a few. My perception of you until recently was shaped by rumors and bad press. Before seeing you on Gavin's channel debating Adam King, I'd only seen out-of-context clips that made you seem like a monster. Since then, all I've seen is an intelligent guy who also is hilarious. I know you get 1,000 requests, but we'd love to get you on. I can't offer you much. But maybe you'll build some treasure in heaven for taking a small but humble channel interview. So that was the message I sent him. Apparently, he thinks that's bugging the crap out of him. So we'll see.
Okay. Was there anything else after that?
Yeah, I think he actually softens up to us after.
You look so happy.
Bugged. Like I don't do a lot of interviews because I don't like doing them and I'm very busy. And when people are just like constantly on my shit, I'm like, I just don't want to do it, you know? So yeah, sure. Maybe. Okay. You know, I got to, you know, and I don't mean to sound like a douchebag or whatever, but I get a million texts and emails and stuff every day. I'm busy all the time. So if I don't respond right away or if I can't get to it within a day, like,
I hate how he doesn't look at the camera.
Chill,
I hate it.
Please.
Yeah. So look, dude,
your whole interview would be that.
Especially now,
he's
right?
He's coming.
Especially now, after having the thing.
Sean, I don't think he's softened
up. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think what the best advice would do is, guys, just keep bugging him. Like, he seems to want you to bug him over and over. So just keep bugging him.
You know what? We're done.
What is this?
Who in this room
has sold all his possessions and followed Christ? Let's start by following the commandments. I'm broke.
Oh, I've had that help.
First off, selling all your possessions and following Christ isn't a commandment. So there's that.
I've been having some interesting interactions though with Protestants. The funniest thing I've seen from Protestants is they won't say Easter. So if you guys get Nick on, don't talk politics. Make him talk about something. Yeah. Listen, and even look, whenever I get someone on, I never talk about what they're known for. We got Taylor Marshall on, and everybody thought we were going to go down like the church drama route. And I'm like, no, let's talk biblical typology. I got anytime I get somebody on, I always try to go a different route. So
we got Tom Holland on, and he didn't talk about his miraculous healing from cancer.
Can you believe that?
Unbelievable. Wow.
Can you believe that?
Why don't you guys get John Doyle on first?
Yeah, maybe I could do that. Thursday knows him. Thursday could probably get me that interview.
I don't know. I can ask him.
I don't know who he is.
He's basically like, the best way to put it is he's like basically like Nick Fuentes, but yet he doesn't do as much of like the racial takes. That's probably the best short description.
I don't think Nick is like his. If I talk to Nick, I'd want to talk about ways to build culture or something, right? Like, I don't know. Like, it's the thing is, everybody gets him on and talk about the racial stuff. It's like, all right, but you know, like, we all know his position. I mean, it's interesting now because
the past year, I've been kind of coming around to recognizing, oh, wow, man, like I've bought the boomer neocon version of politics for so long that I never really understood that our foreign policy is pretty based on horrible Protestant theology. Like so much of our foreign policy towards Israel is based upon horrific Protestant theology. It just is. It's like, well, Third Temple stuff, and they want to, you know, support Israel because they want to build that Third Temple because it'll hasten the second coming of Christ because they all think they'll be raptured up. Like, these people are insane. And that's actually the position that so many Bible-believing Christians have. It's nuts. These are the same people that won't say Easter, and they call it Resurrection Day.
Right.
Because, you know, now that we're Catholic, we're all Ishtar worship.
You know, they're the same people that will walk into a Catholic church and point at a crucifix and either say, one, that's an idol, or two, they'll say, you guys focus so much on his death. Like, he's alive. Don't you know this?
Yeah. Why do you still have him up there suffering on the cross? I don't know, because if that's what you focus your life on, you're actually find the meaning of existence.
Because it's literally like the middle of human history. It's the core, it's the center.
Traditional Catholicism is the only thing that can save this country. That's just, there's no other way.
Amen, bro. Amen.
I believe that.
100%. So how do we get?
We ain't doing nothing.
Yeah. But how do we help it? I mean, how will we use this God's instrument with that? Right. That's the main question. Like, how do we allow God to help? How do we allow God to use us to be an instrument for his glory?
I think like two things. One, you just have to be
sacrifice holy yourself. A red heifer.
Oh yeah. Why not?
Sorry.
I think like one, you have to strive for holiness and virtue yourself first, because if you're not holy, then society's not going to be holy. Like, you can be as based in right wing as you want, but then if you're still watching pornography and hating your brother and going down that rabbit hole, then you're just, and you know, yelling at people on Twitter all day, then you are basically part of the problem as well. You're adding into the fire. So striving for holiness is the first and the core and the key thing. But then two, I would say link up with other like-minded men and actually strive and plan ahead to do something in your community. So I won't say this for more than a minute, but like I put this out on the Telegram chat yesterday, right? That I'm in the process of starting kind of like a political Catholic social action movement. That's old school, where it's like, okay, let's not.
Lila Rose is not going to be happy about this.
She is not at all. She's not invited.
Don't call it Catholic Action, because that name has a history of failure.
Yeah, yeah. We'll call it Cavazos Action or something, because we always win. But the point being is like some type of organization where we're not just doing what like a lot of right wing people do, where it's, let's go and say protest the drag queen story hour. We're definitely going to do that, right? Because you got to call out the evil in your city, etc. But let's also actually link up and say, okay, who works at what businesses? Let's shop at each other's businesses. Let's go down to the soup kitchens and work with people there. Why don't we just go and throw in our own events, like once a month rosary rally in the middle of town, with the specific intention being praying for America to be free from communism and to move past this classical liberal nonsense that we've had in the country for forever. You know, basically things like that.
Or, if you guys are interested, do a monthly rosary for the Pope's intentions and really piss him off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Pray that communism won't overtake Rome. But basically stuff like that. And so there's a lot of guys who are interested in that. If you guys are interested in like doing something like that, if you're part of the Telegram chat, reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk to you. It's still in the very big early on section.
That's brilliant. You know why that's brilliant? Because it's giving men what Islam and the left is giving them that the Catholic Church is not. Well, when I say Catholic Church, I'm talking about the feminized, you know, effeminate with the other church. It's giving them a sense of heroic virtue and purpose that men desperately need nowadays. That's why they go to these things. When you post a black screen, you have a sense of fulfillment that you just helped the BLM movement, or when you post the rainbow, they're given a false sense of purpose. But what I think Nick is, what he's doing here, is he's giving men a sense of purpose that I think can grow from virtuous men. They'll become better husbands and fathers. Then it will return slowly, put the country down. I mean, put the country back up. It has to be a grassroots. It has to be grassroots, in my personal opinion. It's going to take a long time, but I think we can get there.
I want it to be basically like the new version of Knights of Columbus. Let's be out in the community. Let's do stuff and actually help.
Tootsie roll, brother. Bring the Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah, and let's do it. And also, check this out. It gives men that sense of community that we've been talking about, where it's like, okay, you know, maybe you don't have the best parish around you, but if this thing was to get big enough, hey, just go down to your local chapter of this organization, join up, and in the organization, it's not just, hey, let's just sit around and rail against lefties, but then go home and watch pornography like behind closed doors because we're hypocrites. Let's actually strive to build a regimented rule of life, strive to be virtuous, practice, talk about the virtues, work with them together, and then let's go out and transform society for the kingdom of God.
Yeah, if you guys are still looking at filth on the internet, I don't know, man.
You're cringe and gay. Stop.
Yeah.
Hold on.
It's gay. Stop it.
I hate seeing myself. It's weird. I'm looking at myself on screen and I'm vibing it, but hearing a recording of myself is
looking
cringe.
At yourself on
I still
screen.
Personally,
it's gay. Stop it.
I think that's one of the greatest moments on this show, not gonna lie.
It's the greatest moment in internet history.
Yes, Enoch is on Twitter.
Enoch, are you going to the Trad Recovery Conference?
Were you asked to speak to be the opening band, if you will?
I'm performing, bud.
Hey,
I'm performing. You know, the clans at the Trad Recovery
Conference. All right, listen, we're going to wrap this one up. Everybody, if you're not a subscriber to our channel, please hit like and subscribe. Please, guys, help us grow the show. And it would mean a lot to us, especially you new Catholics. We are the most normal Catholic show out there, I'm pretty sure. We're just a bunch of guys just hanging and talking. And we have a locals. And okay, so I bought recording equipment to go to parishes, and I'm going to do some man on the street interviews.
Let's go.
In our locals, you guys are going to help us come up with questionnaires. So once you join our locals, you get the Telegram invite link. We don't give it to anybody that's not in locals anymore. So that's not my choice. That's not Rob's choice. It's the man who runs our locals.
It's locals. There's not one particular little man that runs locals.
No. There's a guy that we chose to run it, and he runs it with an iron fist. So if you want the locals link, I mean, if you want the Telegram link, you got to join locals. I hope so, man. We try to just talk to you guys about the things that are on our minds. And I think we're just pretty typical guys. I thought you guys were going to get to the RCIA topic.
When you come into this show, never expect.
You were bamboozled at RCIA. You actually are
OCIA.
OCIA. So look, join our locals. Come on. You guys got to support us a little bit, man. We're doing our best here. Rob and I put a lot into this show.
Anthony just spent like almost $700 on recording equipment. So,
I didn't spend that yet. I started buying stuff so far I got microphone adapters and stuff. I still have to get some more stuff. If you guys want to contribute to the actual man on the street interviews, Rob has a tip jar set up. Just label it that goes directly to me getting.
Do I still have that? Let me grab that link real quick.
Yeah. Because if you guys do it through YouTube, they take a cut. So Rob's gonna give you guys a link. So if you want to see those man on the street, I want to go to Novus Ordo parishes and Trad parishes and see like the difference. But I don't want to just do the typical do you believe in the church's teaching on this and that. I want to have some unique questions. I want to be able to show them to the priest before I do them, so I don't alienate him. I don't want anybody getting mad at me that I'm doing it. But I think it'll be interesting to just catch Catholics coming out, the Novus Ordo Catholics coming out on the Saturday vigil, and just ask them some questions and just see. And we'll see what people think of the synod. Like your average everyday parishioner, what do you think of the synod on synodality?
This is going to be the answer.
It's gay. Stop it.
I'm so
Nick's
happy.
Telegram. That Nick's would be Telegram the correct, is our Telegram.
That'd be the correct answer.
So, Nick, you don't have a Telegram, right? You're just talking about an ours.
I don't have a Telegram, but if people are interested, go over and follow the Traditional Thomist on Instagram. Send me a message, and I can get you guys some more information, get you guys plugged in once this thing gets rolling.
Yeah, so, Nick, go subscribe to the Traditional Thomist on YouTube. Go subscribe to Enoch's channel. Support Enoch's music, guys.
And we will be on Tuesday. We're reviewing The Mission with Father Dave Nix on Tuesday. That's the Faith and Film episode this month. So if you have not watched The Mission yet, go watch The Mission and tune in Tuesday. This is going to be a good one because Father Nick sent over 3 scenes he wants to go over, and I sent Rob 13 that I want to go over.
Oh, Lord help me.
Poor Rob.
It's a very Catholic movie, man. I thought there was just, like, Jeremy Irons' character just says so many things in that movie that are just like, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about this. It's cool. Just, did you watch it yet, Rob?
Nope.
Go watch it. I'm interested to see your thoughts on it.
Tuesday.
Yeah, go watch it. I'm interested to see what you thought.
Also, this month, this coming month, April, we hope to get the author of The Boniface Option on the show too. If you haven't read the book, I highly suggest it. It's about 150 pages, takes about an hour and a half to read, and it is straight
outstanding. And the guy's not Catholic, but he talks like a Catholic.
I was going to say he's an evangelical pastor, and one whole chapter is him ripping on evangelical worship service. It's amazing.
I got
He says some very Catholic things, and he's talking about Saint Boniface. It's like,
yeah,
he's not Catholic yet.
I agree. I think we'll get him there.
We're gonna.
But I know Joe Rogan's reading that book now too, so I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't take our interview request and takes Joe's instead.
Yeah, that's very.
The show would be way more epic.
Yours is way better. You know, it would be a good show if you guys get William Albright on. William Albright.
Oh yeah.
And just get the audience ask all Marian type of questions because he's an expert on all Marian dogmas.
That's a good idea. Yeah, if you guys have any other people you want us to get on, let us know. So, all right, guys, go subscribe to our locals. Please, come on. Rob and I are begging like paupers over here. Come on, there's no better show than ours. We're the best show out there. Come on. You guys are supporting Pints with Aquinas. He doesn't even know you.
He doesn't even talk about Aquinas.
Exactly.
He does.
It should be called Pints with Thursday.
The movie review is Tuesday, not Thursday.
Tuesday
the 2nd. Yeah.
Tuesday the 2nd. So tomorrow we're off. I have that week I have to go to. Then Tuesday we're doing the movie review. So, all right. We will see you guys later. Yeah, we can get Bug all on. Bug and I talk. I can ask him. We'll see. I met Matt Fred too.
I have too.
Nick was on Pints with Aquinas. Pints with cigars.
Pints with cigars.
When they invite me on the
good night.
When they invite me on the rundown, we'll see. But all right, let's get. All right, see you guys later.